This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, all over the world, internationally, domestically, and wherever you may reside, you hear this golden voice, you know what time it is. It is the Game Dev Unchained podcast. I am one half of the hosting team. My name is Larry Charles. If you are new and just joining us, I have a special guest, longtime friend of mine, Mr. Wham Bam Brandon Pham.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Brandon Pham. Welcome to this week's episode. I brought a couple of guests. This is kind of like a special all-star episode with our oldies here. Alden Filion, who you might have known from previous episodes, and Ray Graham. How are you guys doing?
Hey.
Welcome back, guys. It's been a while.
Hey, what's up? Yeah.
So this is a special episode, Ray. Thanks for joining us, Alden, as well. But we figured we'd break the format a bit and talk about issues, developments in the game industry for the past month, and we're going to discuss different points of views. First on the list we're going to talk about is Dishonored 2 PC launch. So this is something that Ray is passionate about, and I'm going to let him take away what's going on out there.
What's going on with Dishonored 2, Ray?
Oh, well, you know, you guys, if you were in the know, you know that it recently launched. It's out there. And it's right now currently on the Steam reviews, the well-known cesspool that is the Steam reviews. It is sitting at a mixed review rating. And, is, of course, what is the one of the main issues that always happen with PC games that come out that are also console games is the performance, right? Oh, yeah. So there's a lot of performance issues. Like, Dishonored 2 is a great game, but there's some serious performance issues as usual.
Yeah.
And again, people are dogpiling on the Steam reviews to kind of try to bring it down and complain about how bad it is. And yes, I've experienced the performance issues. Like, I play it. I have a GTX 970. 1080p is 1080p is the maximum resolution I can run it at 60 currently on a pretty decent video card. It's not the best video card in the world. It's pretty decent. Their fact says you need a 1080 if you want to run 60 at any resolution above 1080p.
Jesus,
right? So that's kind of ridiculous. And yeah, and the game is like, honestly, the end of the game doesn't look like it. And there's some topics we're going to cover later, some other games we're going to cover later that look better.
Yeah.
That perform better as well. But, what do you guys think of the whole PC thing?
That's a heavy one to start with. Yeah.
That's a common theme, right? You're like, most development teams like aim for consoles, and PC is kind of like the afterthought nowadays, except.
Yeah,
unless you're Blizzard.
But that's what's disrespectful, right? Is like, we have all the PC believers who are like, we are the master race. We have components that we can swap in on a moment's notice to be better than any console alive. And the developers are like, yeah, well, we kind of have to focus on the lowest common denominator. So
every time.
Yeah. That like, sucks.
In theory, it's supposed to be the superior configuration, be easier to adapt to. Like, what? Is it that bad where consoles are so different now, where the change makes such a difference?
If anything, consoles are closer to PC spec these days.
So what's going on? Why are we having such a big problem?
Because, like, well, you nailed it on the head, folks. Like, you know, we all make games, right? So we know how this goes, right? You're pressured for time. You know where most of your bang for buck is going to be. You know where most of your users are going to be. And so you ignore the other thing.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I'm pretty proud that we, like, the last game I worked on was Splinter Cell Blacklist. Mm-hmm. And we actually had a separate PC team that was focused on PC. 4 months. For a long period of time, they made sure it ran well. They added extra features, added extra PC-only features, and And we actually did a good job with it, right? But you have to, that costs money, time, mm-hmm. yeah. and actually caring, right?
About was that it. Alongside with the console development too? They were both going at the same time?
Yeah, it kind of was staggered a little bit. And I think it came out a little bit later than the console version, if I remember correctly. I can't remember. Yeah. But we had a team working alongside of us for months.
Yeah. Was it worth it? Did it sell well on PC?
Well, I don't know the exact numbers. I don't even think the game sold well across the board. But the PC version, we added a really nice looking tessellation. We're doing some special occlusion culling on the CPU, some like optimized software occlusion culling stuff. Like, so we're able to actually add a bunch of features that made the game look better on PC, run better on PC. I have it here on my PC that I run here, and it only runs at 60, no problem. Those guys, and I wasn't even on the team. Those guys did a really, really great job. But I was one of the people saying, hey, we need to make sure that we have a team working on this, right?
So
I think that's one of the cool things, though, about having staggered release for the PC. Nowadays, people are expecting day one release for both PC and console, and they get all sorts of bitchy about it. Like, no, it's the same day. The same day has to be out. Yeah, you know, so then, if you stagger, you have the time to develop a little bit more for these PC releases. But you keep seeing the reoccurring theme of, you saw it with Batman. You saw it with other games. If they both release on the same day, it's going to be a soft release.
Yep. You know who, I will say this. I will give this company credit for always doing a good job with their PC games. And then most recently, they have done a good job with the console games. And I think it's because they develop it backwards. They start from PC being their main SKU, and then console actually ends up being what they port to, Blizzard Entertainment. Right? They put Diablo on consoles. They put Overwatch on consoles. And I haven't heard any complaints. And Overwatch, I would say, although it has a cartoony kind of soft appeal to it, it is an incredible looking game. It's going to be intense if you turn up all your settings. And consoles seem to be running just fine. So is that approach maybe the better approach, Ray?
It is, but Blizzard has had a few little small issues where people say, oh, the console, some minor console bugs and issues on console. And so it kind of happens both ways, right? And you really just need to have teams dedicated. But Blizzard does definitely do a much better job than most folks out there, for sure, by miles. Yeah.
And aren't engines supposed to be mitigating this for us? When you build in Unity or you build in Unreal and they say, hey, click this button to export, isn't that supposed to all be a thing of the past? I thought, what's going on here?
Of course. I work at Unity, and of course you just hit one button, and you can. It's instant. It's automatic. It's magic. Yeah, and it works on every console by clicking one button.
All right, can we talk to Ray?
Export to
switch platform. Build done.
That's it. On a couch while you're doing it.
I was lied to, apparently.
What's funny is the issue before was that they said the PC market wasn't big enough for them to worry and put resource into it, but Blizzard has shown everybody PCs and Steam is huge and still alive, and it doesn't make sense to ignore such a hardcore fan base.
But they created ecosystems around their own platforms. That's crazy. That's mastermind style.
Yeah.
Not too many people can compete with that realm.
Yeah.
They have their own convention for their own stuff. Well done, Tina.
And you guys mentioned engines and whatnot. And that's one of the things that actually bothers me about Dishonored the most, honestly, because Dishonored 1 ran on PC nice. It was ran really, really nicely. But supposedly that was actually Unreal Engine.
They switch engines?
And so they switched engines to an engine called Void, the Void Engine.
Terrible name.
Void Engine. I thought this was Unreal also.
No, it's their own engine called the Void Engine based on id Tech stuff.
Okay.
I can't say, I'm not going to fault the engine on this, right? Because my point is
you can,
but engines are tools.
Didn't the guy who made id Tech left abandoned his own?
right? So I'm not gonna.
He's getting that Facebook money.
Yeah. I'm not gonna hate on an engine I haven't seen or even touched, right? But
what would be the reason why for them to switch to abandon all those resources they made for the first game? You don't hear too much of that. Like you would usually see the reverse of that from.
Yeah, you want to capitalize on the momentum that you built, not have your team relearn.
That's kind of going back. Unless people left,
they restructured with people that knew that engine.
Gotcha.
Or there was a publishing deal that made them use the engine.
It's always money. Racism.
You just hit it on the nose. It's okay. Money, right? You don't want to pay Epic their license, right? And Bethesda's like, look, we got engines in house. What's up? Right? Like we've made games where dudes are like, hey, we have an engine in house. Yeah. Use this. And then you get all the artists, and everybody's like, nah, we want to use Unreal, right? Like happens all the time. So
So this question is more for everyone except Ray. Like, is 5% so bad? Is 5% that bad?
5% isn't that
to get the
indie,
tools,
right?
Yeah, to get the tools for Unreal. Like, is it that bad? I don't know yet. I haven't earned millions, so I don't know.
Okay. You guys keep talking. I'm going to pull this up. But I think, like, Dishonored 2 would be paying a lot more than 5% if they were on Unreal. I think it's closer to 15, right?
Is it 15 for bigger?
I'm gonna look it up while you guys talk.
Well, big titles, big games like that would negotiate their own contracts, like, so they wouldn't even be doing royalties. They wouldn't even be doing royalties. They'll just pay a big amount of money up front, right?
Yeah, exactly.
This is where Unity is better, right? Right.
Well,
I won't put them in a hole. I'm gonna say yes, Ray.
Of course, I'm gonna say Unity's better. Of course, in terms of like not giving up. Now giving up your royalties, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's definitely a lower cost to you if you want to make a game. But different people have different priorities, right? So
yeah.
And let's be fair for the audience, I just want to jump in. We may joke a little bit about Ray working at Unity, but he's not here to represent the company. No. It's just four developers talking here.
This is for sure. In his underwear. Yeah. It's disappointing that they don't serve the PC audience a lot better, because Dishonored 2 is very, yes, you're playing on a controller and it's probably just fine on the controller and everything, but those type of shooters generally are for PC audiences.
Yeah, this is true.
So bad. But the console is fine, right? It's just the PC that's just horrific right now.
So I hear. I wouldn't even say horrific. It's not even that bad. It's nowhere near Batman levels. Batman was just absolutely a mess.
Batman
right?
is disappointing. That team to me is like the best team in the world, and they just take care of the PC. They work on that's the funny thing. They work on the PC all day, right? They're testing first on the PC, and then
wasn't that version a different team though? It wasn't Rocksteady. I can't remember.
Oh,
the Origins one.
Yeah,
that was a different team. That was a different team.
But all the rest, or was it? Rocksteady?
Those Arkham, fine, I thought it was Arkham Knight was the one bad.
Arkham Knight release was the bad.
Yeah, that was the bad.
They pulled it themselves.
Okay.
And the thing, like, I will say this, though, in defense of some of the PC games, unless you're going to go buy a console controller, some of these games with the, like, and maybe I'm the old man with the cane by saying this, but some of these games require such finesse that if you were doing WASD Mouse, you're just going to have carpal tunnel in 2 minutes.
You sound really young right now.
Yeah. What? Really? You're against the mouse and keyboard?
No. So I like mouse and keyboard when all I have to worry about is WASD and mouse, right? Like when I try, so I'm going to call myself out. I played Call of Duty Advanced Warfare on the keyboard and mouse. When it's like crouch, knee slide, boost jump, throw this grenade, I was just like, holy shucks, there's so much.
Yeah.
My dude was getting shot up left and right.
It's definitely easier on the
controller. I remember that day, yeah.
Everything is, like, I came from keyboard and mouse my whole life until we worked on Advanced Warfare, where the team, we were playtesting within the studio, and they're like, you can't use keyboard and mouse, that's cheating. Everyone has to be on the controller, so I switched. Yeah, I had to switch the controller to play with it. And I got used to it. It is comfortable, but as far as response time, like my keyboard and mouse is still number one. But the shitty thing is, I feel like because they move those shooters onto the controller, like the keyboard and mouse doesn't feel right anymore. It's like they designed for the controller first, and then the keyboard and mouse like lags because of the controller lag thing that they put on it, maybe. I don't know. Something like that.
It's okay. You can acknowledge that you're getting old.
I still prefer keyboard and mouse. But speaking, unless you guys have anything else to end it with, Ray, do you have any anger issues you want to work out with?
Let me ask you, did you like the game, right? Like, was it a good game?
Well, actually, I mentioned that right off the bat. It's a great game. It's actually a good game. It's like it's a really good stealth game, right? And it's just unfortunate that these things happen, right?
Yeah, it's minus 10 off the score right there.
Like when something's running at 60 frames, you feel it and you feel happy about it. But when it's all over the place and not steady, and then you have to huge sacrifices.
This is the thing, right? When you were dealing with someone like Ray who bought a $5,000 gaming rig and the game doesn't run, he's super angry about it.
Oh, yeah. My latest rig cost me like $800. Yeah. But you are right. Like, if on PC, so you're dropping $600 for a video card, you're dropping all this money for the components, right? Yeah. And you do that so your components can run anything you throw at it, and then something comes along and it's just like, nope, you know.
Yeah. Oftentimes, it's not the developer's fault, though. Us having just released a Steam game, we found a lot of errors being incompatibility with systems. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of the keyboard and mouse have LED lights on it. And there's a driver that gets installed that runs anything that has LED lights on it, and it's constantly running. And sometimes games hiccup on just that. Mm-hmm. So we were finding like little things on people's systems where, like, okay, shut that off, and they were getting like 5 or 10 milliseconds back on performance just doing certain like incompatibilities of programs you might already have installed, or drivers, and even like having a latest service pack for Windows installed. That made like the game run tons better, for at least in our situation. Like, it's just little tiny things that people kind of take for granted just because you buy a PS4 and it's going to be a PS4, you know, no matter what, you get a target system.
Yeah,
like, we had some stuff where like fog wouldn't run on ATI cards or something like that, like, and it would slow down to like 15 frames per second. You're like, how the fuck should I have known that, you know?
You bought a Radeon, that's what happened.
Yeah.
Hate. Making games on PC is hard.
Yeah.
Making games is hard. Making games on random hardware that could change and random software that could change on you.
Yeah.
It's hard, man. It's hard.
Yeah, it's crazy.
No. Shout out to all my OG PC developers out there.
You're doing fine. All right, so let's move on to the next topic. So we just recently, or we're going through a holiday season, and that's usually known as, you know, all the Call of Duties, the Titanfalls, the Battlefield. I don't know how far you guys in playing all of those at once, because they kind of release within weeks of each other. Which, still got, I don't know, I'm not used to that. Like, that EA was competing with itself within a week's time. And then Call of Duty was the week after that. I was surprised by a few. Like, I really dug the Battlefield 1 stuff. I liked the direction they went with. I felt like that was their best Battlefield they've done in a long time. Even though in the sales chart, the Call of Duty is still on top, I felt like EA closed the gap a bit this year from that. I mean, are you guys, what is your opinion as a developer on the redundancy with the shooters now? Like, is that still a thing? Is it getting worse? Do you guys feel it's getting better?
So I'm okay with it, right? Like, we get Madden every year, you know, we get baseball, hockey, NFL every year. I'm actually okay with the fact that 600 people are going to make, you know, a Save the World army game every year, right? Like, I still have fun shooting people. I still have fun collecting guns, the outfits, and seeing, you know, what new terrorist cell is being taken down this year, right? Like, the world must be so used to terrorist cell factions just popping up all over. But, like, look, I get it. You have some canon to develop a story, but really, you're just giving me a tray to put some gameplay on top of. And I'm cool. I haven't gotten burnt out yet. But I definitely know that, like, I can feel like how long I've been involved. I will say that I can definitely, like, I am not running to the store to go get the newest one. Like, I'm playing it at my convenience. Like, if a copy makes its way to me, like, I will enjoy it. But I actually have not, like, day one purchased it. I don't know how long.
Yeah, this is the first year where I have not bought any of them. Mm. Right, and I have reasons.
Like reasons you don't usually buy all.
No. I usually buy. Well, Titanfall's a new thing, right? But I usually buy Battlefield and Call of Duty every year, right? And I look at it and check it out. Yeah. But my number one reason is it's boring. It's old at this point. Like, so I'm not, like Larry said, I'm not rushing out to go check it, but I do still want to check. I want to check what Frostbite's doing. Mm-hmm. I want to check what the Call of Duty engine's doing, right? I want to see what Titanfall's working with. They'll run at 60 frames. I keep harping at this, that we need more games need to run at 60 frames, so I want to support. But, you know, but also, like, at the same time, especially around now, Civ 6 is coming out. Mm-hmm. Or came out. Dishonored 2 came out. Watch Dogs 2 is this week, and then on PC it's 2 weeks from now. Like, there's just a lot of games, and honestly, like, I'm a big Civ 6 nerd, mm-hmm. so that's, like, way more interesting, and I've already put in 30 hours already. I don't got time to play all these other games, mm-hmm. right? Especially when I think they're boring. Mm-hmm. Right.
What do you think they could do to save you? Like, where could a company like EA or Activision or Ubisoft, like, really shake it up as far as you're concerned? You know,
I heard Titanfall has like an interesting mission that I do want to check out. So I probably am going to end up getting Titanfall eventually. Probably will get Call of Duty eventually, because I heard the campaign is typical. Call of Duty campaign just absolutely bananas. Mm. But like you know, like how they always do, right?
Yeah.
And then I might get Battlefield when the Harlem Hellfighter DLC drops, maybe. Mm. Right? I'm still kind of on the fence. Yep. But yeah, you know. But like Watch Dogs 2 is in a couple of weeks. So, you know, I'm just too busy to be playing all this stuff. Like, real talk, you know.
Yeah, I'm in the same exact boat. Like, I look at those type of games, and even though it's from different studios, different companies, it's starting to blur the lines. Yeah. Like, it just feels like one big game from five different companies. And I don't know how healthy that is. I mean, is that competitive? Is that really being competitive? Where I know Battlefield 1 is taking place in World War 1, Titanfall 2 is in the future, and then Call of Duty is super future. But at some point, it kind of just, like, welds together as one thing that comes out every year. So who knows? To me, I'm exactly in the same position as Larry. Like, this is probably the first year where I didn't really get any of them. I want to check them out as a developer, but as a gamer, I wasn't really too crazy excited. I mean, maybe Titanfall, because I heard their single campaign is a little bit different, like more Portal-ish in some levels. But the rest of them, it's like, oh, it looks cool. I kind of want to just check out. It's graphic.
Can't wait to watch a Let's Play.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Let's Play thing. And that's the weird thing, right? Like, I don't need to play through them anymore. I can just watch it if I really want to look at it from a developer's point of view. I would want to play them, but that's like three games that I got to buy for a similar experience, sort of. You know what I mean?
What's that, $180?
$180, yeah.
Let's Plays look so compelling these days. It's like, single player campaign or just YouTube.
Yeah, and you 70 have bucks free. Two times the speed option now. You know how many games I can play with that now?
Yeah, that's
I agree with so much that you said. Like, I'm kind of afraid that we're painting ourselves into a corner creatively.
Yep. Yep.
Like, slowly, the more real something is, the more intentions that players are. They want to see real. They don't want to disconnect and go into this imaginary video game land where it kind of all started. They're like, no, that rifle wouldn't function that way. It needs to shoot at this velocity. And the more we keep doing that, the more we're going to get these sterile shooters. Like, I'm happy there's an Overwatch that just went by and just slapped everybody in the face. It's like, nope, creative. Check out how it's done, you know?
Yeah.
And Overwatch is amazing. Yeah. Freaking amazing.
Yo.
And that's what I mean. Like, to be competitive, you got to be different. So if you look at all the games of the season, it's like all the games that Ray named, pretty much it's all realistic. It's all based on realism, except for Overwatch. But Overwatch was like released months ago, it feels like. So
yeah,
these days, if I'm going for like creative stuff, I'm sticking with the indie stuff that's coming out. You know.
Yeah, the blockbusters. It's like movies. You know, you got your blockbusters and you get indie titles, so you still gonna watch both. Yeah, it's not gonna push out any. I'm just afraid that holiday season, it's gonna be more and more stale with this type of. It sucks, right? A regular consumer can look at these three games and know nothing about it and just kind of just make a decision off of that. But you know, as developers, we know how each team kind of put in their efforts differently. It's just the marketing feels very the same, especially if they're marketing one week after another. It's like overload. Holy crap.
Yeah.
You guys don't only wait a month? You don't want to wait a month anymore? So
it sucks they couldn't stagger Titanfall 2.
I know. Mm-hmm. I felt like Titanfall out of all three was the most different, but
they should have staggered it so it could be a little bit more successful. I think like stacking it right next to Call of Duty, that's a dangerous move.
Between Call of Duty and Battlefield.
And Battlefield 1.
Battlefield 1. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they had their window. They had a confident product. Like when would you come out, right? Like they kind of want to be close to that holiday season, but still respectful of the other juggernauts that they got to compete with.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true. Well, what is going to happen, though, is usually after the big releases in November, come November, December, Toys R Us and Best Buy do their 2-for-1 sales.
Mm.
So that they'll know that they'll at least get one of those or at least pick one of those up.
Target already did. Target just did one like a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
They always wait right after the big releases. They're like, "Oh, how many do you
want to
get?"
Because a friend of mine got Titanfall and something else as part of that 2-for-1 at Target.
Nice. There you go, Target.
Who benefits off of selling two brand new games for the price of one? Besides the customer, at least.
I think the publisher makes their money back, and like after a certain point, they just don't care. To have just any income coming in, they're fine. They make a profit no matter what. It's like this was like a 2K, right? Like it felt like every time they release a game, a week later is like 20% off. Like 2K is really good at doing that. So I believe like after they make a certain amount, it's all profits from there. So if they sell for $20, it's still making money. So.
And it's technically still a hype train. You get people talking about
the product. Yeah, I think that's their most important thing right there. Just having people talk about it. All right, so that's shooter season. Our next topic is the Pixel phone and Daydream. So I know what Larry's thoughts are. We're really excited. You know, I mean, that's what cool people think about VR. They're really cool. But I don't know what Eldon and Ray thinks about VR. Like, I'm interested in another perspective because a lot of people at this point are still not on board with the VR thing. And now with Google kind of following suit with the Gear, VR, they're doing their own. Is this going to help spread the news of VR and make people like it?
I mean, people get that phone. I guess that's what's really the relevant part.
It's a good phone. I heard it was a really good phone.
It can be awesome, but how are you going to beat Apple at anything?
It's true. They're competing with Apple. Well, it's a good thing that Samsung Note.
What's that?
It's a good thing that the Note blew up before it launched. Dude, that helps. That was like the only Android.
That is true.
Like, as if Google did it on purpose or something.
I was catching the train to work, I think about 2 weeks ago. And, you know, they do the, like, please stand clear of the doors. Yeah. They also came in with, like, an add-on. They're like, P.S. If you have a Google Note 7, please turn it off completely. It is illegal to use that phone for the duration of this ride. I was like, damn.
Yeah. They lost the phone.
They did that on a flight. That's how I first found out there was like problems with it. I was like, what? Why that phone? What's going on with that phone?
Everyone's looking for that guy with that phone.
Get him. I am not about to be on a terrorist list because I was playing Clash Royale or something on the airplane. It's just not worth it. It's just not worth it.
Did it legitimately blow up or just catch on fire?
It would catch fire, yeah, smoke, and actually burn.
While using fire. It.
But while it's in your pocket, this video of a guy had it in his pocket and it caught fire, started smoking in his pocket.
Oh, dude.
So, yeah, dude, it's crazy.
Yeah, those batteries are no joke. I saw this video of a guy, like, he put a knife through his battery, and then the phone was, like, not having it, and just went, like, flare mode. I was just like, holy shit, I didn't know that that's what was in my pocket. You know what I mean? It's scary.
Right next to your nuts. Careful, man. That's crazy. That's really bad publicity. But people are going to line up for the next one.
I think this might have really? Done them in.
Yeah, like the note line
this
is done.
Big one.
It's a big confidence loss thing going on there. Yeah, they're gonna have to win that back.
Article. They can't.
This is where Google comes in. They
can't have a small like. They can't do like. Here's the Note 8 with like half an inch more screen. Right, like people are gonna know that Note 7 components are still in there. They're gonna have to really like.
But like you said, this is a great opportunity for the Google Pixel, right?
Oh, yes.
But my whole thing about Google Pixel and mobile VR and all that, one of the main things is the Google Pixel is not a cheap phone, right?
How much more is it from the iPhone? iPhone's like, what, 600, 800?
It's about the same, around like $600, something like that, right? And so now you want to make a VR for the masses or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think the masses are dropping, you know, $600, $700
for a new phone.
On a mobile VR too. Like mobile VR to walk around with this crazy headset on, right?
Yeah.
In public, right?
So what's going to break the mold for people to try it? Because I've always felt like the phone is the easiest entryway because you have a phone and you buy an accessory. Of course, the accessory is extra, so that's millions of people who won't get into it already. But
the thing right now though is like you need a specific phone. Mm. It only works with two phones, right? Like Gear VR has the Samsung. What is it? S7, right? That it works with.
Yeah,
and then. The Pixel, right? Because of course there's hardware, drivers, all this stuff that they need to have, right, in order for that stuff to work correctly, right? And so I think that's the whole point of, that's one of the cool things about Daydream, right? That's the whole point of Daydream, is to try to create a standard, right, that if you make your phone Daydream compatible, right, the driver, and you have the drivers and everything, this software layer to help you along the way, then you can actually have more phones that are VR capable, right? Because that's the only way you could do it, right? And then maybe somebody can make a cheap VR ready phone for mass adoption, mm-hmm. right? But of course, a cheap VR phone for mass adoption might also run like crap, which would make a lot of people throw up.
So, it's probably like parts from blown up Note 7s out there.
Frankenstein.
Didn't they recall like millions of them back? It was just recently released, and then they had to recall all of them back, right?
Yeah.
They're all in the ditch now.
That's a huge.
You guys
money.
Feel like the Daydream will leapfrog over Gear VR? I mean, Gear VR sold a bunch. Like there's a bunch out there.
Well, it's $100 and people already had the phones. I mean, that was a great way to get that thing going, in my opinion.
Yeah,
you know,
price.
You already had the headset. You just needed the harness.
Do you guys think a software, like a game for the Daydream will make it special? Or is it really just a secondary or tertiary thing for phone owners out there? VR ready. Well, even if
I forgot who it was that said this, but it kind of caught me for a moment. And then I was like, yeah, he's kind of right. But let's see how polarizing this will be when I say it. One of the executives at Microsoft was like, we'll invest in VR when it's more than, you know, demos and experiences.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
I remember the quote, and he was tripping. He was straight tripping. And the reason why he was tripping, like, he's kind of right, but he's also tripping at the same time, because there's HoloLens, right? And nothing is more demo. And nothing is more demo and experimental than HoloLens right now, right?
It's a name on it.
Right? Like, I mean, people are actually shipping, like, products, right? Yeah. And HoloLens is still kind of like this demo thing that looks really goofy and it's horrible, right? So, yeah, he's tripping.
Isn't HoloLens, like, literally... tunnel vision.
Yeah, it's got a narrow field of view is what I heard.
Yeah,
there's like, it's like basically, as it was described by Ron Alpert on this very podcast, he said there's like a little...
It's like a peeping hole.
Yeah. Some porkies.
Yeah. I mean, once they figure it out, it's going to blow up, because they're gearing that towards industries other than...
I mean, VR is awesome. I got the PlayStation VR, and I love it. I think it's freaking amazing.
Is that the
Is
that the cleanest packaging of a VR system out of all? I don't know if you tried all the other ones.
Yeah, I mean, just because it's a professional product, like, it feels like an actual, you know, professional thing, not like something that's still made or polished. Anything. Yeah.
I've been saying this a bunch of times to people I've talked to, and it's like, yeah, PSVR, Sony seems like that's the one that could actually get way more people interested in it. The price is not that crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, Sony knows how to make hardware.
Yeah, they're the only one out of everyone, I think, right? Well,
so install base is out there. Yeah, like, they
already have an install base of PS4 fans out there. The games on it, they came out with like a laundry list of dope-ass games. 10,
11. It was a lot that they released.
Yeah, yeah. And
picking up, like, the PS4 Pro came out last 2 weeks?
I think it came out last week or recently. Or this week.
I think 2 weeks.
But you don't have to have a PS4 Pro for the VR. Right.
You can buy... Did this headset sell pretty well then? I haven't looked at the sales.
In England, they were actually in stores charging people to use it for 30 minutes.
Wow.
Instead of, like, use it for free.
As a demo.
But the demand's pretty high for them.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, man. VR arcades. in a food truck. Bam, son.
That Batman game in there, it is amazing. Like,
I know, Batman. The Batman game looks really good, actually.
It's so good.
Rocksteady. They're always nailing it. So you guys feel like Daydream is just a test bed? It really won't amount to much outside. Yeah. They'll create an infrastructure with the first one, but maybe the second or third one will pick up.
But I think you could say that about all VR right now. Yeah. Like, this is just the infancy. It's just the beginning, right? And I think, I think Daydream's trying to lay down that base that everybody can build on top of, you know, and move forward on. Mm-hmm. You know, they also got the little hand controller, the gyroscopic controller thing.
So what is that, a touch base type of controller, or is it a couple buttons?
I think it has a couple buttons, but I also think there's like a touch
pad thing on it. Mouse wheel on it or something.
Yeah. And, you know,
I like that.
Because, like, you know, you need... Because VR is definitely more compelling. You actually have something in your hand and you're messing around with stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
I think, just before you close, what's interesting right now about all of the segmentation of the market is I'm just happy to see that people are adopting it. Like, we're seeing an actual attempt at VR with, like, some serious backing financially, plus investing from, like, brains and powerful minds around the world. They're taking it seriously this time, right? It's not being treated as just novelty tech. So now that we have this, this is the seed stage of something that's going to be really awesome in 10 years or less, is the way that I look at it.
And I think a lot of those people, there's going to be winners, and there's going to be a lot of losers.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be way more losers than winners, honestly.
Wait, so who's losing right now out of everyone?
Facebook.
Well, there's a lot of venture capital money.
Isn't that funny, though? Oculus, yeah. I do feel...
They started it all, right?
And they're behind everyone.
Yeah, they're just behind. I think they're just behind, right? I think they're gonna come with stuff. They're working on stuff, right? But they're behind. Yeah,
it better be more.
I just think there's a lot of venture capital money.
So what?
Yeah.
There's a lot of venture capital money out there for VR projects that are for sure going to crash and burn.
Oh, yeah. Those are going to be some losers. If you look on Gama Sutra, there's a game I play. I'm making it, you know, like at the end of the football season when it's like playoff time, they have the little, what the hell is that called? I should know this.
The bracket?
Brackets. Thank you. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They should do that.
I'm making a bracket for VR investment companies. We're going to come back to that. If you go to Gama Sutra and every 2 days you'll see like, hey, this company just acquired $46 million for company investment. And then I look at what they do. We promise to deliver awesome VR experiences. It's like that's the tagline every single time.
Best in class, VR experience.
Yeah, exactly.
Fingers crossed. Like,
dude, it's a gold rush. It's a gold rush right now, man. It's a gold rush.
It's a spend rush, is what it feels like. Because where's the gold?
Yeah.
No, but if you experience, you know what I mean? You believe. Like as soon as you experience VR, you drink the Kool-Aid. Like yeah, you know,
but there's no VR software right now that's like earning tons of money, right? Nothing so far.
Yeah, like I've experienced VR, and I walked away with it with like, yeah, that's cool. Right, you know what I mean? Like I wasn't as sold as a lot of other people have been sold on it. Right, I think it's amazing. Like I think it's great. Okay, yeah. But then, like me being who I am, I also see all of the
not
issues.
Not everyone
with
is
it.
Ray, okay? Ray,
no, but like
fantasize a good life.
No, and I know that I'm being like too picky, right? But like you know, if I look in certain directions when I'm in the headset, things look blurry, things don't converge. Like I get all these issues when I actually put on any VR headset. Oh, wow. But like when I first tried out the Vive, I thought that was like with the controllers, and I was like, I had the headset on and I took one of the controllers and I flipped it in the air and then I caught it. I was like, wow, that's kind of dope. Like when it works and it's beautiful, right? But also the little issues that will get fixed still kind of bother me. I'm not like all in, like, yeah, VR, you know what I mean? So
well, speaking of the Vive, I saw something in the news today. The HTC Vive has a peripheral that allows it to go wireless. So if you have never used HTC Vive, it has like a matrix kind of cord that comes from the back. And while you're experiencing like lifelike games, you're tripping over yourself and trying to stay alive. So for me, I didn't think it would be that soon. I guess it's not that crazy, but I felt like VR is just, there's so much investment in it, I guess. So much capital venture guys going into it that the innovation is so much faster than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
It sounds simple, but like I didn't think they would have a wireless headset without having like a massive Samsung Note 7 exploding battery in it. And it lasts pretty long. They said it lasts 90 minutes without it going. What?
That's the problem right there. That's why it doesn't have a big ass battery, right? Because it only lasts 90 minutes, right? And a big ass battery just make it heavier.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, yeah, I'm very skeptical of the usefulness of that thing.
That's honestly. 1 year. That's 1 year. Went cord to cordless.
I'll just say this: if I had on a battery vest or a battery backpack, or you know what I mean, like the Vive headset that plugged into something that was also wireless, if I could just wear all of that, I'm at this stage, I'm willing to let that go. Right. But like it was just, I loved the Vive. It was my favorite VR platform. But having the Predator wires hooked up to my computer is always going to be a limiting factor for me because I don't want to play the tennis game or the karate game or anything that might make me lose my tower because I get too into the moment. You know what I mean? No, just not going to happen.
No, and I think that's why like Carmack was like, he's all about the mobile VR. Like, because he thinks that's where it's at, right? That's, you know, it's mobile. You can take it with you, you know, daydream, all that stuff. Like, it's like mobile's where it's at. And that's where a lot of people seem to be totally interested in. But also, that's not, those right now, those split spaces are not where you could get the impressive graphics, right?
Yeah. I think it's the graphics, and we were talking about style, making games stylized. I think VR is kind of different. I mean, of course, you can still have the stylized game and still have a fun experience, but the realism is what the other industries are really into. So we can make VR feel like a fantasy, a Westworld. people will buy into it faster.
It just occurred to me too, like when I was sitting, I was in some talk and Carmack was talking about mobile VR, right? And he mentioned the things that people should do to fully embrace it, you know, because one of the big things is performance, right? So he mentioned like, maybe you should consider like not even doing fancy lighting, no specular lighting, right? And I was sitting with like a bunch of graphics guys.
Carmack said this?
Yeah, Carmack said this, of course. Yeah, and then I was sitting there with a bunch of graphics guys and they just all started laughing. Right? Because they're like, no spectral light. This is a heresy, right? You know, like heresy. Right? They're just totally like, nah, can't do that, right?
If you stop making games look so good, maybe they would run better.
But there's totally something to be said for really stylized art that's not whiz bang fancy, but just really stylized, really, really nice. And you can still get that same feeling with just really good art direction. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if streaming technology gets a little bit better and Wi-Fi technology, the throughput of having a game play on your PC stream to your phone. Like, that's revolutionary at that point in time. If you can get that going at 90 FPS to your eye sockets, like, that's going to be good.
Oh, man, I don't know. I've been watching Black Mirror, yo.
Yeah, I know, right? So am I.
That's not good. It's not a good feature. So what's going to get us faster? I mean, like, the split is that a lot of developers think that the accessibility is key, like having VR on the phones, pushing for that versus just having impressive looking games as best as we could. So I don't know, like what is the right direction? It might be the combination of the two, but for you guys, what do you think is going to take us to the lead over this hump right now?
Yeah, I think you go crazy, like in amusement parks, you go for like the whiz bang graphics, get people excited about it. And then you have the mobile for when they're like at home, they can have the mobile set up at home, right? Because right now, like the setup for a VR system in your house, depending on how big your room is that you're using it in or whatever, it's just not for the masses. Like mobile is definitely right now ready for the masses. If the phones weren't so damn expensive. Mm.
I feel like I'm going to hit a lot of people just walking around with their VR headset.
Dude, you're going to get robbed. That's like,
yeah,
come on.
I'm going to get robbed.
Well, you wouldn't walk around, right? That would be just suicide, but still, yeah.
So that's not possible, right? Like the whole GPS, like you walking around with your VR headset, you can't walk around like the Vive, right? None of those headsets do that. It's just basically direct.
Only the Vive.
Direction. Only the Vive can move around, right?
Only the Vive does like positional tracking that I know of.
Yeah.
But here's something interesting. And this is a great time to bring it up, right? Like the idea that if let's say VR headsets comes out and becomes a thing and it actually does get adopted the way that we want. Ray, you brought up a good point that like no one's just going to snap it on and like go walk out into the world. But what about like the school gym, right? Like after hours, you know, you're just in a big open room with nothing around. You can play whatever game you want with the confidence that you're not likely going to like smack into a trash can, a car, or, you know, some unsightly human being who's interested in taking your wallet. You know, like do you think VR arcades might actually like VR rooms might be something where you actually have your own stuff, but you just need a safe space that's flat so that you can enjoy whatever experience you're interested in?
Yeah, I could see something like that, like a Dave and Buster's type of spot.
Yeah,
where you could go do that. Yeah,
I just need a room. Me and my friends put on our VR.
They're making one in California. That's they've scanned the entire room, so they know where all the walls and all the doors are, and they actually built everything coming out of those walls, like a monster coming out of the exact wall, traversing in real space. And they have like a crane going on top that holds the cord, so you can freely walk the course.
Oh man!
Yeah. Yeah, I heard about this. Yeah,
they must be pissed seeing that wireless thing is so much cheaper. She bought a whole crane.
Yeah,
should have waited a couple months.
You see, you just need 100 battery packs.
Just give us some time, Ray. I'm sure 30 minutes will be 6 hours soon.
I think that the industry might be going too fast, though. Like
too fast for that thing.
It needs to take time to develop itself. as the fun first.
Because like good software, right?
It's too soon for the arms race. You're right.
Yeah, I mean the designers themselves, they still haven't found like what is good movement in VR, what's good interaction in VR. How do you track hands? Like all the tiny stuff still isn't developed, but people are like, let's make a game.
Yeah,
you know, and everybody's kind of finding it as they're developing and like actually building the car while they're driving it.
Yeah, really disorganized right now. Like first of all, there's like 6 headsets. There's no common marketplace.
Yeah, it's fragmented. Yeah, it's
very fragmented, and like it's a whole different, system every time. It's like you can probably adapt it like any other consoles, but
and I think that's what Phil Spencer meant when he said, "Oh, it's still demo." Like he said it wrong. Like what he said sounded crazy. But really, what he meant was like
when he shared it.
Yeah. But he's like, when y'all figure this out, then we'll be here.
Because we're still figuring HoloLens. Which, we don't know what the fuck this is yet.
which is also not really taking an innovative stance. It's kind of just like, I'll let you guys figure it out and let me know what's up.
Right? Yeah, outside of maybe, well, that's what I'm very surprised. Like the big company investors, I guess maybe outside of PlayStation now, has been like Silicon Valley companies, like Facebook dived into it quickly. And then Samsung, you know, they work with each other. Who was that? Now Google's coming in with Daydream. And then PlayStation is probably the only one that actually is invested out of the big three, which is surprising. I feel like VR is going to be driven by the Silicon Valley companies. Mostly. This whole cycle. Yeah. PlayStation VR might open the market, but I think like the Google and the Facebook is actually going to be making the innovative stuff of VR
because they got the money. Yeah. They got the money to make it rain. Yeah, like they're just making it rain, and they're like, "Hey, we need to hire people. That's not a problem. We can hire people." Right? Like,
damn. So. Well, there that goes. Well, we are reaching that point, but I want to touch one more subject, and Alden knows this better than all of us, which is the entitlement
of a game. I was waiting for this one.
Of a game purchaser. Nice. Just a game fan. Like, do you mind opening up
this? Yeah, Alden, please take us through this issue.
Nice.
Introduce it to the audience.
Well, I think as game developers, we know the fundamental rule of don't go look at the game reviews or the comments in the game reviews because you're going to see the vitriol and just venom that spews out of people's mouths when they're not happy with their price of a pizza game or whatever it is.
Yeah.
They're not happy with their purchase. And it's gotten worse over the years. Communities like Steam have gotten bombed by reviews. Like there's different aspects to the way people behave on there. It's just, it's palpable how much it's changing towards that. And I think it would be smart to look at it as affecting the actual industry itself and how we make games, the choices we make when we're in a design meeting of how it's going to be looked, how people view it, you know? Like, just a small example, this is something that we kind of talked about back and forth on Facebook, a couple of us did, an invisible wall in a video game, right? What it does is it covers the player being able to escape from different areas of the level that they weren't supposed to. So that brings down production costs. So you don't have to build the level tight enough that you know all the testers are going to find a way to get out of there. Like that could be like maybe a month or two of cost of development costs because you have to come up with a unique way. Maybe it's a roadblock now. So you have to model out the cars, the blockers for it, and another expanse of the level just to make sense out of an invisible wall. That in games of old, people just, hey, don't go there. You hit a wall. All right, I can't go there. I'm going to go the other way. It wasn't that much of a stretch, you know, but today's gamer, they don't want any of that. They're like, no, this invisible. I don't like invisible walls in games. No game has invisible walls now. Like they declared it. It is so, and no game has it. Well, you know, I feel like there's a control there, and it's driving costs of development. It's driving creativity down. I just, wanted to kind of bring that up as a discussion topic and see what you guys all think about it.
I could go first, I guess. Go for it. Because it's still fresh in my mind, like what I wanted to say.
Oh shit!
But no. Well, like with the invisible wall thing, I think part of the problem too is that technology has improved so much, and so we have made the games look better and better and better. You know, incrementally getting better. And so now an invisible wall really breaks, I hate using this word, but it really breaks that sense of immersion that the players are feeling, right? Because they're like, hey, you know, this game looks really, really close to real, and oh, there's an invisible wall here. Oh. And it's like, and they're like, man, the dev team is 800 people and I'm paid $60. Uh-huh. You lazy developers, you couldn't put an actual building there.
This sounds like a PC guy. Sounds like a PC guy with a good rig. Complaining.
Right. So it's kind of like you kind of understand a little bit. But yeah, back in the day, man, invisible walls are everywhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Everything looks bizarre. Yeah.
As technology's getting better, we're making things look more realistic. I think you probably could get away with stuff like that in games that don't look as realistic.
Yeah.
Right. I think like wacky and crazy things happen. Like you play Street Fighter, you know, there's wacky and crazy things. Like there's friends of mine that are animation programmers and they can't stand to look at Street Fighter with all of its, how it cuts. Some animations straight up just cut off and go into another animation, right? Mm. They can't stand it. And I'm like, well, there's gameplay reasons for this, right?
Yeah.
Like,
people are gonna fight and switch right? moves.
I just want to meet these individuals. They're like, like as soon as an uppercut gets canceled or something, they're like,
but they're, you know, but like they're an animation program that works on a game where you don't have to do that, right? Yeah. So where transitions actually matter and where the blending actually matters, right? So you can see where they're coming from, right? So yeah. I just think. Like as technology marches forward, things like that become less acceptable because technology is marching forward. Right?
Yeah. Uncharted ruined everything, is what he's saying. Uncharted ruined everything.
Yeah.
Nathan Drake blends into every little possible. Like it's smooth. Yeah. It's fluid. That game did so well with that.
Well, besides that, like I think Alvin's touching on the point. Besides the aesthetic stuff, like there is like entitlement to. There's so much available now that are free, like, and there's so much quality work that are free. It's hard to differentiate an iOS purchase from a AAA nowadays because the graphics are so good. Gamers are so used to a certain type of quality on one device. And just because it's on a different device, they don't understand the economy of it. Like that's a big issue. I feel like most people just want it free now and of quality. Yeah. And that's a problem.
Or also I think there's also some games that come out that are really, 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 really well done.
Yeah.
Right? That seem flawless, that seem so expertly crafted, that took like 7 years to make and they're beautiful games and they're so great. And like the players play, they're like, this is great. This is what games are supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And then there's a game that comes along that was worked on for 2 or 3 years, huge ass team, had development problems, rushed out, and then they see that and they're like, why can't you be like this other perfect game, right? But like, and so there's a fundamental disconnect between the game development process and what the gamers experience. Like the gamers don't know about that game development process, and should they know it? Like maybe they should know, but should they care about the problems of the game? Should they care about how long it took? Should they care about the people quitting in the middle of the project? Should they care about the crunch? Should they care about any of those things? Or should we just be selling them, here's the game, have fun, we did the best we can, right? And I think that's where some of the time it comes from. Like, I think there's really good games out there that they experience, and then they experience games that are just not, maybe not perfect, and then it's a problem, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
No Man's Sky.
Yeah, don't.
I feel bad. I didn't play the game, so I don't know how incomplete it actually was, but that vitriol from Steam, I'm not surprised. It could have happened to anybody at this point. Like, don't do that to any game that comes out.
Yeah, they definitely, they definitely didn't communicate clearly to the public, but also the amount of backlash they received was just ridiculous. It was crazy. Yes.
That's right? This is the period that we're in right now. you have indie games that's like a 10-person team that's looking like a triple A game. So if the gamer doesn't know the difference, and you were talking about the transparency of game development, they're looking at it like, why the fuck is this not GTA? why am I having issues with this?
Well, and then you find out that Sony published it, right? So they're like, oh, you got all this money from Sony, and Sony's shoving it down our throats with all these ads. Why is it better? What's up with you guys, right? But then as soon as they tell me, hey, we're making a procedurally generated game with millions and millions of planets, so I'm like, oh, I already know what's going to happen here. I already know what's going to happen.
Because months ago,
because we make games. We know what it takes to do that, right? And how you actually make that, right? And with the public is like, nah, I want 18 million planets with like GTA level things to do on each planet.
Right?
Come on, dude.
So what is it, over promising? I mean, how can we educate? Because this is a problem, because there's going to be more indie games out there that's going to be AAA quality that are not going to be able to meet expectations, right? And is the public going to turn against every single game and then have no chance out there for indie developers? Like, is this something fixable, avoidable by anybody out there?
I think if you're just honest, straight up, open, way more communicative at the beginning, and basically say exactly, like, we plan on building this. We would like multiplayer, but we don't know if we're going to deliver it. We would like there to be more things to do on the planet, but there might not be a lot of things to do on the planet. There might be.
There might be fun things to do. We're not promising anything.
I'm not a professional.
We're promising something.
But like, how do you hype someone up?
I mean, you can sell that though. You can sell it, because I mean, you look at No Man's Sky, you see what it looked like, right? It looked great, right? And so you just concentrate on what you're showing to people, and you really talk about what they could potentially expect, right? And make it known that, hey, it's in development. A lot of the messaging was a little bit off.
Yeah, they promised too much.
But even then, they still didn't deserve all of that hate.
Oh man,
that they received. So.
Yeah, that's really personal. it's hard. I think it's easier when you're like one of 300 people on a development team, but if you're one in 10. And they're complaining about design, and you're like the only designer. You're looking around the table. It's like hard to push blame. And the vice versa is if a game is awesome, right? Then that's all you. But the inverse of that is, of course, as terrible. Right. You're the only guy who's doing PR, and they're like, "This is the worst PR in the world." And the Sony guy like kind of shitted on you in the press after you being absent. It's hard. Like, wasn't there recently? I don't want to sit, shit on them too long, but like didn't they have like a hack Twitter incident?
Yeah, there was a hack or something.
A hack.
Yeah.
And they cover it up, saying there was like a disgruntled employee.
No,
it was like an apology to the masses. Like, I'm sorry, this wasn't.
Yeah. I think it was just somebody hacked his LinkedIn account and then got into his email. I was actually replying back to the journalists with it was a huge, huge nonsense.
So it wasn't just him like catching himself in a vulnerable moment. tweeting.
Not at all.
Okay.
At all. Yeah. I don't think so, at least. So I think it was just a straight up hack that happened.
Do you feel like they can earn their trust back at this stage?
Yeah, I think
like coming back with Alan's like squinting in his face. Is it too late?
I'll say this. They are not. At least they are not Star Citizen. At least that.
Citizen, is it like Star Citizen didn't get as much flack, mainly because they haven't released anything yet, right? Is that the trick, not to release anything?
No, it's a Sony arm. Sony arm puts you in the middle of everybody's eye. And so you're an easy target at that point in time. You're right there in the middle of everybody.
Yeah, they're very visible, like on stage at E3, you know. And I think Star Citizen should get way more flack than it is getting.
Yeah, it's not, right?
Because quite frankly, Star Citizen got way more money from customers.
Like 100 mil plus.
No Man's Sky, I could even dream of it.
For a JPEG of a ship.
So do they even have a release date? I know they just cut like a major feature, right?
There's no release date, right? It's just like, it's basically like, hey, 2.6 is coming, and then there's going to be a 3.0 coming.
Oh my God.
And when will that be? Who knows?
So that's the trick.
Yeah.
We got to make a really cool screenshot and just keep promising more screenshots.
We gotta sell JPEGs of ships for like $1,000.
There is a work. I shouldn't say working. There is something that you can download and play, yeah. Right?
True. But I have it. I had to at least try it.
But it is very, very buggy, very broken, very incomplete, very lacking. Right.
There's a real team behind that, right? They have a full on studio.
Several. There were several. Now that they've reduced to, like, I think, just one team. There were like three or four teams before. I thought.
Jesus. I think they still have at least two or three teams at least working.
Do they?
I think yeah. Yeah. So it's crazy.
It goes back to this, like, the gamers not trusting game developers, right? So you got this Star Citizen going on. You got No Man's Sky promising the world and didn't deliver, and then completely went ninja silent after the game was released. And then you have, I guess this has kind of died down, the Kickstarter thing where, like, millionaires are coming in saying we need your $5 to make our game and then saying that it was more of an approval process for them. Like, you know, I don't blame gamers for kind of just being confused by this whole process, because if I didn't know anything about game development, I have no idea what's going on. Like, what type of quality can I expect at $60 nowadays, you know?
Well, like, I think, like, Kickstarter and all that, you're basically just, that's a straight up buyer beware, right? You're giving money to some dude that says, I'm going to give you something later. You know what I mean? That's straight up buyer beware.
It's like, I don't trust this.
Sick, huh? No, that's,
like, he got burned from Star Citizen. Now he doesn't trust anyone anymore.
No, hey, like, I've backed all sorts of stuff on Kickstarter. Uh-huh. It's been mostly successful. Yeah. A lot of things have come, like, mad late. Some things have come none at all. Like, well, there's one thing in particular that didn't come at all. It was like some hardware thing. Never came. Right? You know, and I'm just like, I can't be too salty, right? Because I gave money to somebody and they're like, hey, I'll hit you up later with that product. Right? And so it's just all about, like, do you believe that the person can actually deliver on that product, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, but as soon as you give that money, as soon as you hand that money over, yeah, it is buyer beware. But there should be some sort of responsibility that you feel that you took somebody's money, right? And you're like, okay, now I actually have to deliver, right, on what I'm telling these people.
Yeah, but you're like a guy with a moral. Like, most people, I hate to say it, I feel like most projects go on Kickstarter just to get some money. Like, I don't think,
Kickstarter?
Yeah, I know. There's good ones out there. But I feel like this is coming from the game development community. Like, most projects are mismanaged, right? Most projects, I feel, are under budgeted, right? Or over budgeted, but they don't deliver.
Understaffed.
Yeah. So how do you get these guys who are doing it the first time? Like, it's less of a chance of succeeding, right? Of knowing how to do it, even though you're a professional or whatever, it's hard to say that these guys will do it correctly, where publishers are having a hard time figuring out if they've been doing it for years. So the expectation of Ray is, I think, is correct. It's like, yeah, you can back it, but just know that a lot of these projects don't go through. I don't know the statistic of the Kickstarter projects, but I feel like most of them are probably failures, right? For games, basically.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know the statistics either. But I think, like, if Star Citizen goes the way that I think it's going,
fucking Star Citizen, man.
It will be a huge, huge black mark on kickstarting anything.
You're in it to die, right? That's what are you gonna say? One day, just 100 million gone.
100. What are they at? Like 125 million, something like that.
Oh my god.
See. The thing is, a lot of people will make games to eventually get to that level of money.
Yeah.
I guess the problem is when you get that level of money before you've made the game, where's the incentive to make the game?
There's no incentive. That's correct, man.
Well, it can also backfire on you, right? You get all this money and you're like, okay, what am I going to do with this now? I know. I'm going to hire 100 people. And sometimes that's not the thing to do, right?
Yeah.
Like sometimes it's, you have to take a step back and be like, hey, let me actually focus on our mission and take baby steps, right? Because that's that's what happened with Star Citizen, right? It was like they got all this money and they're just like, okay, now we're gonna make 4 games that nobody could ever make, you know, and try to put them all in one game. And nah,
are they down to one feature now, or are they still having all 4 feature now?
Dude, that game was supposed to have farming in it, man. Farming in a space game, dude.
What?
Farming. I'm gonna say it again for you. Farming in a space game. Like, I mean, and that's on their roadmap before like Jump Gates in a space game. Come on now. Like just this lack of priority.
You have so much money, dude. How big is that team?
Lack of priorities. And honestly, that's never going to get finished. Like, that's never going to show up. That feature is never going to show up.
Yeah.
But it's on the roadmap before Jump Gates, which in a space game, if you know anything about space games, you kind of want Jump Gates so you can jump to different stars, right? Like, you need that. You know what I mean?
You're farming for the Jump Gates.
Yeah, I guess. I guess you are.
Yeah. Damn.
All right. Well, gentlemen, this is the very first, and I would, at this point, call it a success. I think you might see a lot more of this kind of content coming from us, the Game Dev Unchained podcast. I just want to thank you both for being a part of this. I had a lot of fun. I can see by the tear wells in all of you guys' eyes that you did too. But since no one else is talking and I've got the mic, this is Larry Charles. I'm going to say goodnight.
Hey, thank you for joining us. It's Brandon Shem. I'm out.
Peace.
See you guys.
If you enjoyed this podcast and you want to stay in touch or continue to follow our developments, then you need to go to facebook.com/GameDevUnchained and drop a like and stay in touch. You can also get the direct feed for this podcast on soundcloud.com/GameDevUnchained.